BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And, for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is Marina Abramović. She's one of the most revered living artists. During her 50-year career, she has moved, scandalised, provoked and delighted audiences around the world and in the process brought performance art into the mainstream. Her work is characterised by physical endurance. She has drugged herself, walked the Great Wall of China and spent days vainly attempting to clean blood from a gigantic pile of cow bones representing the war in the country of her birth, the former Yugoslavia. Her work is every bit as emotional as it is physical, and her invitation to us, the public, to participate has made her world famous. In the beginning, the reaction was sometimes violent. In 1974, she invited gallery goers to use objects on her body to stimulate pleasure or pain. She was attacked, left scarred, and so traumatised, her hair turned white. Yet 40 years later, almost a million people attended her exhibition at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, many queuing for hours for a chance to sit opposite her in her landmark work, The Artist is Present. Most recently, she's been present in London, dominating the city's art scene with a retrospective at the Royal Academy, a show at the English National Opera, and a takeover of the South Bank Centre. She says, "The entire aim of my work is to elevate the human spirit." Marina Abramović, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Hello. Sorry, I need water because my voice like is Tom Waits and Marlene Dietrich on the bad day.
I want to start with that idea of uplifting people, if you don't mind, because I think we all need it at the moment. Has that always been your purpose, or are you reacting and responding to the times that we live in?
You know, it's really important, you know, what is my function as an artist today? And I always believe that the function of an artist is a function of a servant. We have to really see what's happening around us, and we have to see what really we can give to the society. Mm. It's so easy to reflect the horror of the moment, but it's so important how to transcend that horror and actually create beauty and harmony and something that actually can bring a peace in your heart. And to me, it's really important, lifting the human spirit.
Marina, you're sharing your music with us today, and I know that music is incredibly important to you. You've described it several times as the highest form of immaterial art. How did you approach choosing the music that you're going to take to your desert island?
It's a very nomadic choice, actually. Mm-hmm. It's all over the place, you know. I don't have one kind of style that I like. You know, people, you know, love just jazz and they listen to jazz or just like classic music. I mix everything up. And it's very much to do with my three very clear marinas that I accept in myself. And they're all full of contradictions. There is a heroic Marina, then we have a spiritual one. I just want to live in monasteries. I just would like to stay with monks forever, the rest of my life. And then we have the bullshit one. And bullshit,
so this is the third Marina, because I think the first two are quite present in your work, but the third one might surprise people.
The third one is really more private one, that people know that I'm hilarious. You know, I'm so serious in my work, but I am so known for the really dirty, politically not correct jokes. And then the one who loves chocolates, who love to be lazy, who love, you know, really cheesy music.
Well, Marina, we're very pleased to have all three Marinas present and represented in your discs. Tell us about your first piece of music. What have you chosen and why?
It's a Goldberg Variation by Bach and it's performed by Igor Levit. So we met and we just had the most insane joke telling each other. So we had so much fun and we have this connection. But what I told him is to sit at the piano absolutely motionless for half an hour. A piano is coming very slowly. This was done in Armory, very slowly on the rail towards the public. And public is sitting 650, people in the deck chairs, well, like a beach chairs, in a kind of semicircle. But before they come to auditorium, they open the lockers and they have to detox themselves from totally technology. They have to put the watches, the computer, and the telephone in, close. They get headphones. They go into that hall, sit on deck chairs with headphones who absolutely block any sound. And all what they see is the pianist sitting motionless on the piano, approaching to them to the circle. So when he get to the center, they hear the gong, they take the headphones off, and then they start hearing the music. And the light is going slowly, slowly down till the end. The only visible is his hands lit, playing the music.
The aria from Bach's Goldberg Variations, played by Igor Levit. Marina, I want to go back to the beginning and talk about your roots. You were born in Belgrade, Serbia, then Yugoslavia, 1946, to Vojin and Danica Abramovic. They were both war heroes and members of the post-war Yugoslavian communist government, and the story of their meeting is incredibly dramatic. Is it true that they saved each other's lives?
Yeah, it's true. You know, my mother was actually commander of the unit of the first front, the Red Cross, the bringing the soldiers out of the field into the hospital. And my father was a kind of guerrilla and really doing very courageous acts, like going into on the white horse into a village full of Germans and attract their attention, and they all run after him, and he have the brigade behind and kill everybody. And after 1 or 2 years, they come in wounded partisans, and one of these wounded people is my father. And this was in the war. Nobody gave each other transfusion, no blood. She discovered they have the same blood group and give transfusion and save his life. And then, you know, they fall madly in love. And in 1946, they married, and I was born in 1946. And then the marriage was hell, because they came from completely two different types of people, and they never could connect. You know, that leads to divorce and lots of trouble. But this was a really romantic, amazing story.
So a difficult marriage, but yeah, an incredible meeting. Even though it was communist Yugoslavia that you were growing up in, the positions that your parents held in the party meant that you had quite a comparatively wealthy lifestyle at the time. What was home like?
But, you know, first of all, if you're a communist and you've been with the Tito army and be national heroes, you're completely privileged. It's like a red bourgeoisie. I had the French lessons, I have English lessons, I had a ballet teacher, I have the piano teacher. We have made all the thing what I have to do is to get education and study. This was all what was required from me. It is very spoiled looking from outside. But at the same time, both parents never talked to each other. It was very violent and a very sad childhood. It was one of the kind of the darkest parts of my life.
Marina, let's take a moment for your second choice.
The kitchen of my grandmother, it was the center of my world. She was deeply religious. She hated communism. She would bring me to the church and on the horror of my mother and father, who were absolutely atheists. So this constant contradiction between these two worlds. And I remember in the morning I was sitting and waiting for breakfast that she was making. And we had a very old Bakelit radio, which is like always on. She always listened whatever it is. It can be folk music, it can be classic music, it can be bad news, good news, whatever it was on. And just out of this radio came this incredible voice. And I remember so strongly. And put radio absolutely on maximum, stand in the middle of the kitchen with eyes closed and listen to the voice. And it was such a moving for me, something so incredibly emotional. And the speaker, when the music was finished, they said, this was Castadiva, you know, from the Maria Callas.
Maria Callas singing Castadiva from Norma by Bellini with the orchestra of La Scala Milan, conducted by Tullio Serafin. Marina, your mother encouraged your love of art, but she also exerted enormous control over you. You've described your childhood as full of spirits and dead people that I could see.
I like shadows. I like invisible beings. I like to see the dust coming out of the window, you know, like the miniature planets from another galaxy. I had this incredible, very, very strong imagination. Mm-hmm. And there was this placard, which is like a kind of cupboard that you get in, which is one of the places that I really believe that the spirits live there. I didn't want to be at home. I never felt I was there welcome. I always felt that some kind of strange destiny, strange karma put me into that kind of environment to learn the lesson. All what I want to go is to leave.
You talked about yourself earlier, Marina, about Marina number one, who you often describe as a warrior. I wonder if you consider yourself a survivor of your childhood.
I never felt happiness at home. I never felt back home. The mother, father never even talked. And there was incredible violence to each other. They slept with the pistols next to the bed. And I was thinking that's the way how it was. The only much later when I actually see the other families and see how happiness can look like, then I really felt that I was completely deprived from all of that.
That must have been a shock.
Yeah, but at the same time, I will not change anything. You know, how am I now? It's been very hardcore, my upbringing, but I learned so much. I began so strong. And now I'm doing this work 55 years, and, you know, I'm 77, and, you know, people go to pension, and they stop working. I'm not even thinking of stop working. I mean, I have so many projects still in my mind. I have now completely booked the work till 2027.
I think that's artists. They just keep going and going. It's time to turn to the music, Marina. Your third choice today. What's it going to be, and why are you taking it with you?
Now is something very special. I was visiting Björk at home. She had a little barbecue, and there was a few musicians that I didn't know. And she just introduced me to one and said, this is Anthony Johnson. And it was this big, big guy standing there, sitting, hardly not talking. So I say hello to him. It was all my conversation. I went to this concert. And then came Anthony. And he stood there, and he sang this song. I stood up, literally, and just tears comes from my eyes, uncontrollable. This was a voice of angel. This was a voice that I never heard before. Later on, you know, we become friends. He sing on my 60th birthday. And then, you know, later on, he took the transition and he's transgender now. And the name is Anoni. And this music that we're going to hear, it's incredible piece. It's come from the album Hopelessness, and it's called 4 Degree. And we will be just this 4 degree warmer, our planet will stop existing. And I think it's an incredible song, and I would like you to hear.
It's only 4 degrees, it's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees, it's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees, it's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees, it's only.
Anoni and 4 Degrees. Marina, your mother had a high-profile job as the director of the Museum of Art and Revolution in Belgrade. And when you were 14, she took you to Venice, to the Biennale. What sort of impression did your first sight of the city make on you?
I remember 14 years old, coming to Venice Biennale with the train, which takes a long, long time from Belgrade, mm-hmm. and coming out and crying. And she said, "Why are you crying now?" I said, "It's so beautiful. I never saw Venice, the gondola and things. It was like coming from the very grey, gloomy communism into this unbelievable, overwhelming beauty.
Technicolor.
It was like almost too much." Mm. And then going to see the Venice Biennale, and like Rauschenberg and Louisa Neverson, I mean, those are the things that I never saw exist. Mm. And it was like opening my eyes to this so amazing art.
You actually asked your parents for oil paints and art lessons. I think that was for your 14th birthday. What did your first lesson consist of, your first formal art lesson?
My father asked what I want for birthday, and I said I want oil painting, because I was, again, 14. Oil painting was like, wow, then you become really artist, because everything was done with watercolors and crayons, you know. So he doesn't know nothing about art. He's a really old revolutionary guy. But he had one of soldiers of him who became abstract painter and went to Paris to study. So he was just, you know, visiting Belgrade, and he called him, say, "Help me for the daughter to buy the oil painting and give her at least one lesson." So we go to the shop, we got tons of stuff. He bring me to tiny little room, this was my studio, and I remember so well, he cut the canvas but doesn't put on the frame, just a kind of free canvas on the floor and irregular. Then he throwed some glue on the canvas, a little bit of yellow color, a little bit of red, a touch of blue, and then he put gasoline over the whole thing, and he put the match and just throw on the canvas, and everything explode. And he looked at me and said, "This is sunset," and he left. This was the first painting lesson of my life. I mean, for a kid, this is impressive. It was really just this whole idea that how art can be so many different things, and the approach have to be different. So it was an important lesson.
We've got to make some room for the music. Give us your 4th disc, if you would. What's next?
Paloma Negra, Chavela Vargas. I love... She's Mexican. She was early lesbian. She was so powerful, unbelievable singer, but also enormously drinking tequila, you know, and kind of behaving like a warrior. But there is something about her music that I like so much. It's a music so full of passion, so full of tristesse, of the sadness and melancholy. And there is especially this song, the Paloma Negra, this is the moment when she cracked her voice. And it's just something that I can't even explain. I really have a physical reaction on her voice.
Y agarraste por tu cuenta la parranda. Paloma negra, paloma negra, ¿dónde andará? Ya no juegues con mi honra.
Paloma Negra by Chavela Vargas. Marina Abramovic, in 1974, you performed one of your most famous and most notorious works. You placed 72 objects, including a loaded pistol, numerous sharp tools, a rose, a book, and a whip on a table, and you invited the public to do whatever they liked to you for 6 hours. What were you expecting to happen, and what actually happened that day?
I didn't expect anything. I was just angry. I was so angry that at the time the performance was so trashed. You know, there was the horrible criticism. There was never even considered as an art form and so on. So the public in the beginning, they come and they play with me. They will give me the rose. They will give me the kiss. Then they start getting more and more violent. And the time, because time was a very important factor, because time goes on and on. And then they cut my T-shirt, then they take roses, the pin of the roses that stuck into my body, mm-hmm. then they cut under my neck, then they start drinking the blood. I think I'm not raped, because it was a normal art opening and people came with their wives. I was just like nobody expecting any of this. And then there was also pistol, put in bullet in the pistol, put given to my head, and the person was squeezing my hand. And then another person came to take the pistol, throw out the window. It was all this hustle and lots of things happening. I said, the gallery is for 6 hours, is finished. Come and tell me. Because I, whatever you do with me, I have no reaction. The woman will tell men what to do. They never touch me. They will take tears out of my eyes. It was very interesting. Mm. It was 2 in the morning when he came to me and said, 6 hours is over. And for the first time, I start, you know, getting me as me, and I start walking to the public, and literally everybody ran away. And I came to the hotel, and I looked myself in the mirror, and I had a piece of grey hair. Mm-hmm. And that I knew public can kill you.
Do you reflect on the extremes that you were pushing your,
no,
yourself and your body to?
No, it's done. It's done. I learned the lesson. I have to move on. Mm. This is something that I hate, this kind of questions, because I can't deal with the sentimentality of it, you know. Mm. To me, it's so important. Learn the lesson, move on. Learn the lesson, move on. Now, I'm 77. This exhibition is the ending of a big period of my life. I am completely now for the new work, new perspectives, new ideas.
All right, Marina. Well, I want to find out what came next. But first, let's have some more music. Your fifth choice today.
Okay, one moment for the music. Now, let's go to Tina Turner. I love Tina Turner. I love how she, you know, changed her life, how she kind of get out of this, you know, torture relationship and create new self. And I like this animal part of her. I like her as a dancer. I like her as a performer, as incredible, charismatic, full of life. And I just, when every time anybody asks me, what are you going to sing in karaoke setting, in Korean restaurant, I always go for private dancer. Let's listen.
And your karaoke repertoire, is it just the one song or are you
No, just private dancer. I'm terrible. I my voice is impossible.
You don't think of them at all. You keep your mind on the money. Keeping your eyes on the wall. And your private dancer, a dancer for money. Do what you want me to do. I'm your private.
Tina Turner and Private Dancer. Marina Abramovic, your karaoke song.
I'm so terrible in karaoke, but what I can help?
Marina, I want to ask you about a very important chapter in your creative life, the work you did with your former partner, the German artist Ulay. You created and performed some bold works together. Rest Energy, for example, included you holding a bow, Ulay holding the arrow, which was pointing directly at your heart, and then you both lean back until the bowstring is taut. One false move and you would have been dead. You described yourselves back then as one creative entity, the self. It must have felt so powerful to be part of that.
Only I can say about this piece, this was based on trust. And each of us had a little microphone on the heart, and you can see how adrenaline rushing and the heart is beating crazy. And it was really the shortest piece we ever made in our life. It's 4 minutes and 20 seconds, and for me it was like forever. Mm-hmm.
It's still, my heart was in my mouth watching it. The Royal Academy is part of the show. The video is there.
It's intense. Yeah. I know. Even for me, I don't want to really talk about past and be sentimental, but this piece always gets me.
The two of you created a manifesto for life and art in 1977. You presented your values, and they include having no fixed living place and a commitment to permanent movement. So it was a very nomadic period in your life. You were living on a bus with your dog, very few possessions, travelling all the time.
Incredibly happy moment.
What did you learn then? You loved it.
It was incredible. It was no compromise of any kind. We hardly have any money to live on. We had nothing. We went to in different places in the mountains. I remember in Sardinia, we went to this little place, Orgozolo, and the shepherds would give us a job to milk the sheep in the morning. We are talking 120 sheep, 5:30 to 6, 7 in the morning. And then we would make pecorino cheese with them. I was walking in wooden shoes and woolen socks, which I knit, because we didn't have nothing. I would never change that. It was so important to me to be radical, to do what I love with the man I love. Mm. We didn't have nothing. But that nothing was the beginning of everything.
You felt free.
Yeah, free.
It's time for disc number 6, Marina.
In the 1970s, end of 70s, Ula and me went first time to India together. And the first time we went to Bodh Gaya, which is the place where actually Buddha got enlightenment under city on the Bodhi tree. So we spent lots of time with the Tibetan community. And also we met His Holiness Dalai Lama. We met his teacher, Ling Rinpoche, who really was incredibly important for me to understand, you know, about the meaning of Buddhism as a philosophy. And, you know, Tibetan chanting or Heart Sutra is something that I really love, and this is something I choose.
The Heart Sutra Chant by the Tashi Lumpo Monks. Marina, in 1997, you were awarded the Golden Lion at the Venice Biennale for a work called Balkan Baroque, which was a response to the war in the former Yugoslavia. You spent, as part of that piece, 4 days scrubbing a huge pile of bloodied cow bones. The cleaner they became, the more covered in blood you were. Talk me through creating that piece. It must have been emotionally very close to home.
To make the work that I done for my own country took me 3 years. You know, every artist was responding so easily, but to me it was so close. I was so ashamed of the war. I could not do it like that, you know, on the request. And it took me a very, very long time to, you know, approach from the right angle. I have this huge pile of cow bones. And, you know, we are talking Venice Biennale. We are talking 30 degrees Celsius. Incredibly hot in the summer, in the basement, smell was unbearable. Warmth was coming out of the bones and you know, while we are doing. So smell was a very important element. And also that you never can wash the blood from your hands when it was done. And I was thinking, I need to create something that is transcendental, something that can be any war, anytime, anywhere. And right now I'm showing this piece in the Royal Academy and I have incredible reaction. People from Palestine, from Ukraine, from Israel, they come and they stay in that room the longest because I'm talking to all the wars everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. You have to create something that actually deals with much larger perspective than just your own. That was incredibly brutal to smell and to do what I've been doing. It's so bloody hard. Mm. I became vegetarian after that. I could not, you know, I could not wash the smell anymore.
You have talked about works that have changed you, Marina. I mean, you know, I'm wondering about your sense of identity when I'm talking about Balkan Baroque. But there was another piece that you said changed you completely. The artist is present. 2010, it was in New York City. You sat in complete silence while more than 1,500 people queued to sit opposite you. They couldn't speak to you, they couldn't touch you, but they could share your gaze and they could stay in front of you for as long as they liked. So members of the public, as well as artists like Björk and your former partner Ulay, all took part. There is a simplicity to it. It must have been as difficult as it appears to be simple, this piece. People found it incredibly moving, and I know that you did too. What was the thinking behind it?
So first of all, you're in many of your questions, you always want me to admit my change, and I'm always trying to avoid and to kind of reject. But now I have to give up. So first of all, what's happened is every piece brings the change. Mm-hmm. From the beginning, from my first performance, you know, Rhythm 10, every single piece, you know, I learned something. And that's what I learned, bring me to the next work, next work, next work. So it's a really process. And then works become more demanding, more difficult, more demanding, difficult, difficult, difficult. The Balkan Baroque, of course, the change. But I think that really the most difficult piece that I ever made in my life, it was Artist is Present, because it was the most painful, the most difficult, and every day could be the last. The whole skin was in pain, my back was hurting, my legs were swollen. You know, it's not natural to be emotionless that way. I have to train for this piece entire year, you know, like astronaut. I have to change my metabolism, that I eat in the night only and sleep and drink enough water so that during the day I don't have any of this necessity. It was 1 year training, you know. And what happened there is that I experience unconditional love. I develop unconditional love for every human being sitting in front of me, old, young, sick, healthy, child, whoever. And this was opening of the heart, which is really painful. It's like your heart opened for the universe. And I absolutely understand that something does to me, that when I stand up from the chair, I'm different, and I was a different person.
Marina Abramovich, it's time for your next piece of music.
I was 17 years old when I got this music to listen for my 70th birthday. And this was Concerto 21, C major, you know, Mozart. And we have now to listen here the most beautiful version of Mitsuko Uchida, which I listened live in New York many times. But now, why that music? This was the time I remember I was born. 30th of November is snowing in Belgrade. Everything is white outside and very quiet. And I'm sitting in my room and I'm listening to this music. And I just realized for the first time ever that actually I'm going to die. I'm mortal. I'm 70 years old, and the first idea that actually, oh my God, everybody's going to die. Every day you're actually closer to your death, whatever comes. And that realization was incredibly strong and was related to this music.
Andante from Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 21 in C major, performed by Mitsuko Uchida and the English Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Geoffrey Tait. Marina, just a few months ago, you had a brush with death. You had a pulmonary embolism and had to spend 6 weeks in intensive care. How are you now?
Great.
You look fantastic. You're dominating the London art scene.
I still have pain in my leg because I didn't have enough physiotherapy time to recover. But doesn't matter, you know. I don't care. I'm really happy. I take a shower and sing. I never sing in the shower before. There's something like a realization that it's not my time yet. And it's all this new energy is given to me.
Marina, I'm about to cast you away to your desert island. For someone who is a performance artist, how does the idea of solitude appeal?
Oh, I love solitude. I spent 3 months in the forest, in a cell, just repeating mantra. And I finished mantra after 3 months repeating 1,100,000 one time. And I only had one meal, which the monastery bring me up in the mountain. I didn't see nobody. And then the meal is only eaten before 12 o'clock, and then put the dish outside. And after 3 months, when I finished this 1,000,000 whatever mantras, I send message to monastery, and they bring me down, and I have to burn all my possessions, and then I was ready to go. And so solitude is something I love. I don't love loneliness is one thing. With loneliness, you suffer. But solitude is, for an artist, is absolutely necessity.
Well, I think the island might inspire you then. Before we send you there, Marina Abramovich, one more music choice.
Oh, my God, I forgot about the trashy, the bullshit Marina. Now we're getting the real deal. Okay, so Jack Smith is a very interesting artist. Not many people know about him, but he comes from the 60s and 70s, you know, and I traveled with him for a while, Ula and me, and he will always play the Andrew Sisters, and I got completely addicted to this music, and I love it. It's so trashy. Now we're going to listen. rum and Coca-Cola by the Andrews Sisters.
If you ever go down Trinidad, they make you feel so very glad. Calypso sing and make up rhyme, guarantee you one real good fine time. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter working for the Yankee dollar. Oh, beat it, man, beat it.
The Andrews Sisters, rum and Coca-Cola. So, Marina Abramovic, I'm going to send you away to the island. I'm giving you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare. You can also take one other book. What will that be?
I would like Uspensky's Search for Miraculous. You know, I really love Gorgiev. You know, such an interesting character who was a teacher, also in some kind of shaman in the same time. And he wrote these books about Beelzebub, which is so difficult to read, but Uspensky find a way how to translate his teachings for the people who understand in much kind of simpler way.
So this is esoteric philosophy,
esoteric.
Is that right?
Yeah. Uspensky was his student, and he actually created Search for Miraculous to explain the Gorgiev, to decode him, because he was very complicated to understand.
Good for spiritual, Marina, as well.
Yeah.
So you've got the book. You will also have a luxury item, Marina.
I know the island could be warm, but I don't care, because the one thing that I'm living in is blanket, is a cashmere made, is a triple or four time knitted cashmere, very thick. And literally is a blanket. It's great for the winter, for the aeroplanes, for, you know, sleeping on it, making tent out of it. It's multi-purpose. And I love, this is something I always have with me.
The cashmere blanket is yours. And finally, which track of the eight that you've shared with us today would you save from the waves first?
I would try to save Tibetan chanting.
Why?
You know, because this is the only one who really work on energetic level. When you listen to this, it's not just it's not a music, it's vibration. And this vibration really work on your molecular system and could put you in a certain state of mind which other music can't.
Marina Abramovic, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
That's it?
That's it.
I love this story of Desert Island. It's something that can always work, because on the end of the on the day, we need Desert Island. We need, even if it's not real, we need to have in our mind somewhere Desert Island that we can go and rest.
Hello. It was lovely to chat to Marina, and I hope she's very happy on her island with her blanket, enjoying the solitude and coming up with her next idea. There are more than 2,000 programmes in our archive which you can listen to. We've cast many artists away over the years, including David Hockney, Sonia Boyce and Peter Doig. You can find all of those programmes if you search through BBC Sounds or on our own Desert Island Discs website. The studio manager for today's programme was Jackie Marjoram, and the producer was Sarah Taylor. Join me next time when my castaway is the dancer and head judge on BBC Strictly Come Dancing, Shirley Ballas.
I want to tell you about my podcast from BBC Radio 4. It's called Fed, and it's with me, Chris Van Tulleken. It's about one of the most important things that we all do every single day. It's about what we eat. And I'm taking a close look at one food in particular, the most commonly consumed meat in the world. And it comes from a humble, unremarkable little animal that, as I've been finding out, is actually pretty extraordinary. It's chicken. We eat around 74 billion of them per year, and yet it turns out I know almost nothing about where it comes from, how it's raised, or the impact it has on our bodies, our culture, and the planet. But I'm going to find out in Fed with me, Chris Van Tulleken. Listen now on BBC Sounds.